Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Lena Raine. Hey, I'm really looking forward to jumping in and talking with you about your music for Celeste.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It is just such an incredible game, and your music adds so much to it. It's one of those experiences where it's kind of inevitable. I mean, I can't even imagine this game without your music. It's just such an awesome fit. When were you brought in to work on the game?
I was actually brought in super early, about 6 months into production. They originally started with this Pico 8 version, sort of a lo-fi, you know, 8-bit-ish sort of like fictional console that a lot of indie developers were working on. And they had developed this, the original Celeste, in about like a 3-day game jam sort of thing. And so afterwards they were like, okay, this could actually be something really cool. And so they started building it out into a full-fledged game and brought on some additional artists and stuff to help out. And it was about 6 months in, and a good friend of mine was friends with the developers, Matt and Noel and the rest, and so she introduced my music to them. And so Matt actually contacted me just on Twitter saying, hey, you know, it's good to meet you. You know, I think your music would be a perfect fit for this game I'm working on. And so I checked out, like, you know, a demo of the first level, and I was like, yeah, this is really cute. I'd love to be a part of this. And so, yeah, it was extremely early on, because the entire development was about 2 years or so. And so I was on the project for about a year and a half.
That is phenomenal. First of all, it's amazing that this game was only done in 2 years. But also, yeah. And honestly, I felt kind of like Madeline when I started it, because I hadn't read a lot about the game. I got sucked in because I listened to your music first, and then I wanted to hear it in the context of the game, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Oh, goodness, yeah. It definitely, and purposeful in a way, but also kind of, it was interesting how it reflected development of the game as well, where, like, for me at least, also going into it, I was like, okay, well, you know, this is a cute platformer. And, you know, I didn't know just kind of where the direction the story was going and everything. So I started writing music, you know, naive child that I was, just writing, you know, really happy, you know, sort of optimistic, sort of adventurous platforming music. And then as things got further and further and sort of the layers started revealing themselves, then the music kind of just adjusted to fit those emotions. And so in a lot of ways, it was kind of almost more authentic of Madeline's perspective, just because, you know, all of us were kind of taken by surprise, just like she was.
Yeah, the emotional arc of the story is just incredible. And I think having such a difficult game to play really is just so, it makes it more authentic. It makes it feel genuine, and you can really appreciate Madeline's struggles for sure, because you're doing them too. So when was sort of like the tipping point when you realized that this story was going to be much more emotional than the original plan?
I think it was about when I got towards the end of the second level. In the game, it's called Old Sight, but on the soundtrack, it's a track called Resurrections. And there's a whole lot of music in that level. And I was just kind of going chronologically through it and just, you know, piece by piece, kind of unraveling things. And it really got to the end when the team was kind of planning for this slightly more elaborate cutscene at the end of it. And I was like, okay, well, you know, this will be cool. And I didn't quite know what exactly was going on. But then we got the animations in from Pedro, who is our pixel artist. And it was this telephone booth literally transforming into a demon and eating Madeline. And I was like, whoa. And it's a little cartoony, you know, it's kind of got these little googly eyes and, like, you know, has a little phone dangling out of its mouth and burps. but it's still like this kind of like almost, you know, terrifying dream imagery where Madeline is going through all these things. And this part at least is in her head, but it's some serious stuff. And especially the phone conversation that she has with this sort of mysterious person that's never really delved into, but you can tell that there's some genuine actual demons, you know, internally haunting her, aside from just the almost sort of cartoonish goth other side of herself, there's an actual, like, when you get that phone call, I think, is when you sort of make that connection. It's like, oh, this is also real life for her. It's not just this dream. And so scoring that part and just going as minimal as possible, just this really ominous drone towards the end of that track, I really wanted to kind of underscore the gravity of it. It wasn't just this sort of happy-go-lucky adventure. It's like, okay, there's some serious weight here. Thank you. And then you wake up, and then it goes into this piano version of it to really just kind of let you unwind and sort of come down off of that really intense moment.
I love that cue, awake, because she's there all by herself, and there's just nothing but her and the stars, because it's nighttime on the mountain, and the loneliness of it. And you really get a sense of what a solitary journey this is going to be for her. It's really powerful.
Yeah, you definitely get that sense, and having just little brief encounters here and there with other characters, like, it lets her kind of check in, but for the most part, it's a very, very solitary journey for her.
Yeah. Is there a spot in the game, whether it's a level or, just some moment in the game that really resonated with you?
I think the moment that resonated most strongly for me was a bit towards the end of the fourth chapter, the gondola ride. All of these moments, I feel, in the game, there's these sort of very very story-heavy moments where it's not just platforming. It's like, here's the exposition points that are sort of the big hurdles that Madeline has to overcome. And so in a lot of ways, that gondola part is very much a hurdle that she has to get over. And for me, connecting into that, like, It's literal for her. It's literally she's suffering a panic attack or anxiety attack, and needs to center herself and really find herself to be able to proceed. And for me, like, I also suffer from anxiety and depression, so I identify with Madeline a lot in just kind of the struggles that she's dealing with. And so musically, when I was scoring that part, like, I really wanted to just hone in on the key parts that would make it feel like an anxiety attack and make the player uncomfortable, and to really put them in that position to kind of feel those things.
Yeah, and you did that so well with just the piano, which is kind of Madeline's voice, getting completely engulfed with this the massive power of the synths. And I haven't experienced an anxiety attack, but it certainly seems like that is what it would feel like. So that's an amazing moment.
Well, thank you.
I especially loved the moment when Madeline is journeying up through the Northern Lights after she's had that long, long talk with Theo. And it kind of seems like maybe she's turned a corner, maybe everything's going to be okay. And then she and then she runs into her just her troubled self, her dark side. And just that moment, it just kind of illustrates how things can just really turn on a dime.
Yeah, and it's a really, you know, another one of those moments, like, you know, in any sort of good pacing for almost like a heroine's journey for her, like getting to that moment and kind of thinking that she's conquered it, and just like, you've come to this realization, and it's like, yeah, no, I need to just reject this thing, and you know, this is the boss, you know, this is the thing that I have to beat, right? And then Madeline, this, you know, internal name that we gave her, she, you know, is hurt by that, because she, you know, she's also Madeline, like, you know, she doesn't accept this, because, you know, she's also a person. She's not just this agent of her internal self, and just really kind of turning the music against her in a lot of ways in that scene was something I had fun doing, because it's actually a remnant from the moment just before with Theo, where they're talking and there's this little synth line that plays there, and I wanted to take that, and like how so many just kind of really, really bad thoughts, you know, manifest inside yourself, like just little things can kind of nag at you, and like little things about how someone said something, like those are kind of those little things that transform themselves into the anxieties that we stress over. And so just sort of doing a literal transformation of that synth line into what became just this giant, like, you know, battle line, just jumping literally out of her UI to get at you.
Yeah, it's really powerful. And it's brilliant how even in the soundtrack, you keep those two cues together so that they really kind of flow one into the other and reproduce that feeling in the game, which is very, very cool.
Thank you.
we've talked a little bit about how the piano is kind of Madeline's voice, but I think it's really great that you chose other instruments like the guitar for Theo. And those are two, you know, every time she meets Theo, it's like, oh, we get this little sense of normalcy in a way, because he's so easy for her to talk with. And the way you've blended the piano and the guitar are just so great, because that way, you know, it kind of brings us back to center, I guess.
Yeah, I felt like it was a fun thing, even though Theo doesn't really have a whole lot in the soundtrack. Like, ultimately, it's Madeline's story, so, you know, everything is kind of revolving around the piano, but just kind of having that little bit of kind of improvised guitar things just really captured the vibe of Theo for me, I think. And putting that in that sort of fireside chat was pretty important to just tie them together in a way that wasn't just this little thing that you played whenever you're around him.
Yeah, yeah. And you need to change it up from time to time, you know, with each encounter. And because one of the conversations is so very long, it keeps going. And I really appreciate how when, well, in my case, I'm stuck in an area for a really long time,
it sure.
It doesn't get repetitive. And the way that you were able to create these loops and adding additional layers is really, really skillful. Did you have an opportunity to do a lot of playtesting to kind of get a sense of when you needed to change it up?
Oh, absolutely. Like, from basically the gray box state of the levels, like, I was in there playing with the mechanics, just seeing how all the levels were laid out and the general, the narrative arc, the gameplay arc, which kind of mirrors a narrative arc. I wanted to see all of that so I could get a good sense of, like, okay, how long is this piece going to be playing in the game? Are there any spots that it makes sense to change it up? And what are the mechanics that I can play into to make the music not wear itself too thin? And in a lot of cases, playtesting through things and seeing where I got a little too caught up in one particular loop and just kind of it wore a little too long. And so I would, like, go back and maybe extend out the loop a bit. And so there's a lot of iteration going back and forth with the team and kind of getting their opinions as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about being part of the process so early in development, because you do have time to try out stuff that maybe doesn't work, and you've got plenty of time to change it rather than coming in at the last minute. So that was, I'm sure, really, really helpful too. Your cue, Quiet and Falling, is another one that I just have really gotten hooked on. And I think one of the reasons is it reminds me of the C major prelude from Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier. And I'm wondering if that was intentional or even an influence for you?
Definitely not intentional, but as with any of the influences that I have, like, it becomes this vocabulary that you're pulling from. And, you know, absolutely, like, I studied Bach in college and a whole bunch of different eras of music and modern music and everything, and, you know, listen constantly. So it really just kind of becomes this vocabulary that I'm speaking through in my music. So sometimes those references come across a little more directly, sometimes more obliquely. It depends.
What were some of your other influences that you drew from for this soundtrack?
For this soundtrack, there was a lot of... there's a composer named Olafur Arnalds who does just really beautiful piano work and also extended beyond just piano work. But in a lot of ways, just like the Celeste soundtrack, like he uses piano as a bass. And really, one thing that struck me about his music was just how intimate he gets with the instruments and mics everything so closely and really just brings out all the mechanical sounds of the piano itself. I was really inspired by that and wanted to do a similar sort of treatment. Unfortunately, I don't have my own grand piano that I can record, but I use this really lovely sample library by Spitfire Audio called Felt Piano. It's specifically a piano that has what's called a Celeste pedal or a felt pedal, and and it's essentially just, you know, having a layer of felt on the strings to dampen the effect of the piano and make it just a really lovely, soft, warm sound. And so it, you know, it was kind of perfect that I was like, oh, the Celeste pedal, obviously. Yeah, I'll use that for the game Celeste. But they also had that really lovely and like intimate miking on all of the samples that let me get in there, get really loud, you know, key sounds and pedal sounds and just make it seem as much as possible that I was recording an actual piano.
Wow, you fooled me. No, I was positive that you had used a real piano. So I guess that says a lot for, first of all, your skill at using samples and also the quality of samples these days.
Yeah, no, I was surprised. Like it's just kind of mind-blowing the level of fidelity that they're able to get with those sample libraries. I love them.
Yeah, and it sounds like you had a lot of fun with using a theremin sound for Mr. Oshiro, too. I love how, well, I don't know if we can say this as a spoiler or not, but he turns into something kind of surprising. And the theremin is absolutely the perfect instrument to kind of bring his character to life.
I had a lot of fun with him. Similarly, I don't actually have a theremin. It'd be lovely if I did. But really wanted to, you know, kind of play off of the fun stereotype of, like, you know, the spooky ghost theremin sound and just kind of really give him a playful side, but also kind of gets in real deep, you know, since, like, every character in the game, like, he's got multiple sides to him.
We mentioned about samples and synths. So when you've got so many sounds at your disposal, you know, in computer terms, it would be millions of colors. How do you start the process of kind of narrowing down what you're going to use and then decide on the palette?
I think a lot of it is trial and error for me. I have a number of sounds that I like to go back to, and synths are an easy one for me to really nail down a very specific palette of not just, you know, what synth I'm using, but like what parameters I'm able to bring out of the synth to really create a sound that, you know, for lack of a better term, is iconic. And I think a lot of it, you know, comes down to the project. It comes down to like what the creators or directors or whatever, you know, on the team, like what they kind of envision for the game. And I try to, you know, to suit that as much as I can. But when possible, like I love just playing around with things that are unexpected or symbolic to me in a number of ways. And, you know, for me, you know, the piano was something that was fueled primarily by just kind of happening across it while I was playing around with sounds. And the sound that, like, sort of the higher notes on a piano, when you sort of play them in arpeggios, really kind of reflected the snowy mountain feel of Celeste to me. And that just kind of worked its way into the background of the first track, First Steps. Well, it's not the first, but, you know, the first main level. And it was originally just kind of a background element, just kind of doing little arpeggios and kind of being the snow falling. But then as I started building that out, it kind of spoke to me. I was like, oh, yeah, this is a really good melodic instrument for the soundtrack as well. And I just kind of ran with it. And thankfully, like, the team was super willing to kind of let me experiment and try some things to come up with a sound that was both personal to me, but also fit the game really well. And it's tricky, especially for something that's rooted very specifically in a certain style. Because with Celeste, it's that very chunky, pixelated, lo-fi art. It's very easy to kind of go in the 8-bit, you know, chiptune direction or whatever. But I think a lot with Celeste actually is about sort of crossing mediums. There's the 3D mountain, there's the hand illustrated UI stuff, and then the pixel art. Like, there's a lot of different mediums at play, and so I felt like we could do a lot more with crossing between different fidelities of instruments.
Yeah, and I think some of the most special moments, at least for me, are the gorgeous art, but then the unexpected sound of an acoustic seeming instrument like the piano or the guitar, or for Mr. Oshiro, there's a little harpsichord sound in there. And all mm-hmm. of those, I think, yeah, they kind of not mess with your expectations exactly, but they certainly add more depth to the game than if you had just gone the 8-bit route. Although we get to hear that with the little Easter egg thing for the Pico 8 version that's in the resort, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, we even got to go like Super 8-bit, like Famicom style, with the actual cassette tape rooms, little timed challenging rooms. And those are actually, I get a lot of people asking me about them because they kind of came about out of necessity. Our sound designer, Kevin, was kind of figuring out what to do with these rooms because we really wanted to have everything, you know, synced up to a beat so that we could have these timed platforming challenges with disappearing blocks, but also not be like super rip your hair out frustrating, like, you know, Mega Man games where it's just like this tempo that is completely at odds with the music and you're just like, how do I even, you know, keep up with these platforms other than like ignoring the music entirely. So we really wanted to tie that in with the music, and the first idea was like, oh well, we can just grab the BPM of whatever the background music is and, you know, try and sync it up to that. And that turned out to be a very messy thing that didn't actually work out. So Kevin was just kind of playing around with like, okay, what can we do to make the music and the level design kind of in sync? And so he came up with this little like chiptune remix of the background music and just, you know, put it together and then synced it up in FMOD, which is the program that we're using for audio implementation, and made it so it plays basically like a sequencer inside of FMOD, which is then tied to the tempo of the actual level. It's insane. This just very complicated implementation. So he put these together mostly out of necessity, but ended up doing like these little 8-bit remixes of my music as well. And those unfortunately didn't make it onto like the soundtrack or the B-sides, but a lot of people have been asking me about them, and so I'm constantly like nudging Kevin, be like, hey, can I get those files from you? Because I really want to get them out. And I actually, I did two of them also myself. It's secret. Everyone just thinks I did all of them, but it's mostly Kevin. But I did the last two, the Summit and Core. I did those two remixes.
Yeah, let's talk about Reach for the Summit, because that is like culmination of the whole thing. I mean, in so many ways, because, you know, the final battle always is sort of like a final exam of everything you learned the game. And you did such an amazing job doing all of these callbacks with the earlier levels. And it sounds like that was a pretty epic task for you.
Yeah, that was... Oh, goodness. Like, I've got a screenshot. I have a Patreon, and so I share sort of work in progress stuff with my patrons on there. And while I was working on the Summit, I was, like, looking at my project file in Ableton Live, and I was just like, oh, goodness. Like, if you looked at this, you'd think I was, like, scoring an orchestra or something, because it was just, you know, multiple pages of parts. It was one of those things that was very difficult for me to sort of wrap my head around and... to approach from a compositional standpoint, because the task seemed somewhat impossible, or not impossible, but just very daunting, because here was a level that needed to have background music that essentially drew from seven completely different, like, level sets and mechanics. And I was like, well, I have to pay homage to them. Like, I have to do this, have to do the work to, like, to pay this off, because, you know, there's references to all these different levels. You're, like, literally going back through all of the mechanics, all of the sort of themed rooms, like, everything was coming back. And so, you know, one possible solution was, like, oh, do we just, you know, play some of the background music from each of the levels, like, to sort of, like, hey, remember this background music? And ultimately, it wasn't enough, because I was starting off in such, like, this high tempo thing, and I was like, I can't just cut the momentum like that. Like, I have to keep it going, keep it energetic, because, like, this is your final ascend. Like, this is your final challenge. And so ultimately what I ended up doing was writing a piece that was very flexible and creating a melody that was sort of based on a variant of Madeline's theme that kind of just kept on going and created a whole bunch of background elements, like different percussions from referencing all the different levels and finding, like, what was the most impactful elements of each of those tracks for those levels. And not trying to do too much of, like, completely changing the arrangement every single time, because there were a lot of common instruments that I used between the levels, but kind of creating just a giant file that has so many layers to it. And, like, I could go into that file, I could put everything at, like, 100% volume, and you could hear every single you could hear every single layer of the Summit playing simultaneously. It would sound like chaos. It would sound terrible, but I could do it. And that was the only way that I could actually get through that piece.
Well, what it brought home to me was hearing those little references, there's a little flicker of Oshiro's theremin and other cues from the other levels. It sort of reminded me that, yeah, I got through that. And so it was like really a positive thing to be reminded of how far I had come in the game, which I was probably the point, right?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting how utilizing dynamic music so heavily, like we were able to almost have a change of music as like a reward as well. Because, not only were you progressing and actually getting through the level, but like, hey, like little bits of the music are changing and kind of, giving you a little like sort of different flavor of something to look forward to.
Yeah. Well, and then speaking of a different flavor as a pianist, I am really excited that you're going to be working with Trevor Gomes on piano arrangements of the cues from Celeste. That is just such a great idea.
Yeah, I'm so excited about that.
Well, when you reached out to me, I went to see the podcast, and I saw that you've recently actually talked with Trevor.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And he's an amazing pianist, and his arrangements, well before I had any real concept of like, is Celeste actually going to be a success? Like, are people going to care about it? Like, I had been listening to his music, and specifically starting with the Chrono Trigger album that he did. And I was listening through to that and just really, really taken by the way that he did these arrangements, because he, much like my inspirations for a lot of the way that I approach piano for Celeste, like he really gets the instrument. He gets really in deep with it. And so just kind of storing in the back of my head, I was like, wow, I'd love to work with Trevor sometime, maybe as a pianist for like a future project or something. But then like literally it was the day of release. I was at the launch party in Vancouver, and just my phone was going nuts because people were just like constantly yelling at me on Twitter and like, in a good way, and sending me emails and all these things. And like, it's day one and I'm getting people being like, let's work on something together.
Wow.
I'm just like, oh my God, like, calm down. Like I'm at a party. But I got a reply on Twitter from Sebastian over at Materia Collective, and he was like, hey, I would love to work with you on something. Can I shoot you an email? And so I was like, yeah, for sure. And so once I got back to Seattle and kind of calmed down a bit, I met with Sebastian, we grabbed coffee, and he was very much pitching me the idea of doing sheet music for Celeste, which was amazing because that was something that I was already kind of thinking about. Like, I would love to be able to put out, here's some piano tracks that are from the game. Here's the sheet music for them. And, I was just kind of stressing over like, oh, like I don't have any means to do that myself. Like, I'd have to get Sibelius again and all that stuff. But he was talking to me and was like, I'd love to do this and also like, an arrange album of those tracks. And he just, who would you like to work with? And I was like, oh, like I can just pick. And so, I name dropped Trevor because I knew that, he did the albums specifically for Materia Collective. And yeah, I was like, yeah, I can just get in touch with him tonight and see what he thinks. And then, independent from anything else, Trevor had just picked up Celeste that morning. Like, basically, as we were talking, like, he was, independent from even knowing that this was a possibility, he was checking out the game and, like, getting super into the music. And so when Sebastian emailed him, hey, would you like to work on a Celeste project? He was like, whoa, I just got that today. And so, yeah, so he, like, listened to the soundtrack and everything and got super, super into it. And we had a conversation, just kind of planned it out, and it's, it's still in the progress of happening, but I'm super, super excited to get official piano arrangements out there, and then also just a gorgeous book of sheet music to, get in people's hands and put on their pianos and just start playing.
Yeah, and it's just, listening to the music from a game you've played is a really powerful thing anyway, but then when you can get inside it and actually play that music for yourself, it's like that experience times infinity. So that is,
yeah, it's so wonderful. Like, I grew up with a whole bunch of piano arrangement albums that I imported from Japan, because I was a huge fan of, you know, Final Fantasy and all those, you know, the Square Enix soundtracks, and they pretty much without fail would put out a piano collections album of like every Final Fantasy, and so I would get all of them and almost listen to those more than the actual soundtrack, because it was just like this gorgeous piano arrangement of things that I could just actually sort of plunk out on the piano, and some of them came with like booklets that had the sheet music in them, and I was just like, this is so cool, and so I love that that's a tradition that's kind of being carried over and being brought, you know, to a lot of indie games actually. Just recently, like Undertale was another one that Materia Collective did the piano book for, so it's just really exciting.
Oh yeah, it's I think opening up a whole new audience for lovers of game music too, so that's mm-hmm. that's very cool. You know, one of the things that I really loved, you know, when you get to a point you're in between chapters and the game offers you encouragement as you go through it, and the one that really stayed with me was, look at all the times you've died as learning opportunities. And so I'm wondering what you learned about writing music for games by the end of Celeste that maybe you didn't know before.
Yeah, I think one thing that I can definitely take away from the experience was just the team aspect of working on a game, particularly an independent game where it's just a really small team. I've had the luck to work on projects where I can actually be very invested in the game and to play it, like, because some of my previous things that I've worked on were like, you know, Guild Wars, where I was literally part of the development team and working on it. And that kind of jaded me a bit, where, like, you know, having the opportunity to work on the game itself as well as the music kind of gave me that sense of ownership to not just the music, but the things that the music were being a part of. And so the process of working on Celeste and actually just being in like the team Slack and being a member of the team and like playtesting and giving feedback, and you know, it got to a point where like almost everyone on the team was kind of giving writing feedback and we were really getting into the story, and just, you know, it didn't matter which discipline we were actually a part of, like we were all contributing to this game in some way. And I learned that that's how I work best. Like, I don't know if I can do another project where I'm not just in there and part of the team. And it was an interesting thing, because that's not, as a contractor, as sort of a common game musician, that's not the usual experience that you have working with an independent team. You know, it's very much that sort of work for hire contract sort of relationship, where a game gets to the tail end of development and they're like, well, we need music. And they get in touch with, you know, someone that, you know, is well known enough, but also doesn't, you know, charge more than their budget. And, you know, then that's the process. And, you know, they work on the music, and I'm sure they get very into it also. But like, for me, like I can't not be a part of the process. And I think thankfully with Celeste at least doing as well as it has been, like I'm afforded that choice now, and I'm very lucky for that. And that's definitely something that I want to carry forward into working on more games, is to really to bring that experience and to bring my whole industry experience with me as a tester, as a game developer, as a writer, like bring all of that experience to a project, even if I'm just doing the music.
Yeah, wow. I can't wait to hear what you do next, because I'm sure it's going to be just amazing.
Can I plug the next thing I'm working on?
Sure. I didn't want to ask, because so often when I do ask, they'll say, oh, well,
they're NDA'd.
Yeah, I know. And a couple.
Well, luckily enough, like the next thing I'm working on is actually, well, okay, I'm working on a ton of things. Most of them are NDA'd. However, the one project that's kind of the most imminent is actually a self-directed project that I've been working on for a number of years now, called Escape, spelled ESC, but it's a interactive novel that I wrote, and I've been working with this really amazing like glitch pixel artist named Data Erase to do art for it, and also Tumelo, who is one of the remixers on Celeste, and he did also Read Only Memories, that soundtrack. He is doing sound design for me, and I'm just kind of programming this whole thing together. It's like the first time I've ever, like, you know, made a game. But it's this really cool, just kind of what I'm calling dream punk story that I'll have an original soundtrack for. And I don't know exactly when it'll come out, but I'm really excited to finish it up and put it out there.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. So now we've got something else to look forward to, which is fantastic. So.
Yeah, coming soon.
How can people find you? Can they follow you on Twitter or SoundCloud or in your website?
Yeah, I'm all over the place. I'm at Kuraine, K-U-R-A-I-N-E, on Twitter. I have a cute little website that just lists all my projects. It's lena.fyi. So just enter that in, and it's got like little sort of snippets of everything that I've worked on, not just music. I've got a Bandcamp, radicaldreamland.bandcamp.com. You can buy all the albums I've released there. Goodness, I'm on SoundCloud also. You can search for Lena Raine. I'm sure I'll come up.
Awesome. Well, it has been so much fun talking with you. Your music just really spoke to me, and it's been so interesting to find out how you put it all together and kind of look under the hood. So thank you so much for spending some time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a really pleasure talking.
Great. That's the goal.